We move for the next presentation, which is going to be presented by Sonia Callejo, actually in Liverpool, my best surgical case in uveal melanoma.
Good morning, everybody. I'd like to start by congratulating Dr. Brunier for organizing this meeting. I had the pleasure of seeing a lot of old friends that I worked with many years ago in the lab. I started working in the lab long ago when the lab was at the other end of the other corridor of the Lyman DAF. And it's quite difficult to summarize all what I have learned all these years from Dr. Brunier, and how grateful I am for all the accomplishments and that I was able to do thanks to your very generous support. Most importantly, I am really grateful for seeing in me this passion for uveal melanoma and ocular oncology that hopefully I will be able to tell you a little bit of my experience in that area today. So last year, I went to Liverpool to join the Royal Liverpool Ocular Oncology Center that is directed by Professor Bertil D'Amato. Professor D'Amato, for those of you who don't know him, he is a true inspiration in this field. He has really pioneered many clinical and also surgical techniques that we are using nowadays to treat patients with ocular melanoma. He very kindly provided me part of his presentation in this surgical technique that he developed and perfected, and he's among very few of ocular surgeons who is able to actually perform this surgery that is called transscleral local resection of a tumor. This is not a surgery that he will offer to every single patient. He has a very strict criteria for patients to perform this surgery. The patient has to be very healthy, not only because it's done under general anesthesia, but also because in this surgery that lasts approximately 2 hours, the patient is under profound systemic hypotension with a systolic blood pressure of 50. So it's really suitable for only a few of these patients. So this is a case that are very similar to the ones I have seen since I joined his service. A 45 years old male who presented to the service with a fairly good visual acuity in the affected eye and was found to have a mushroom-shaped choroidal melanoma measured 15 millimeters in larger tumor dimension and 11 millimeters in thickness. Just based on the size of the lesion, the patient was not suitable for brachytherapy, so he offered the patient the possibility of transscleral local resection. So this is the surgery that he starts doing 180 degrees pyritomy and isolates and disinserts the recti muscle that is involved in his surgical field, and then starts to transilluminate, put some traction sutures here, and then transilluminates to delineate the anterior margin of the tumor. That's exactly what he's doing right now. And he starts constructing an outer scleral flap that a little larger than the size of the tumor itself. And as you will see shortly, this flap is quite thick. It's almost more than two-thirds of the thickness of the sclera. And as you will see, you see very easily the uveal tissue through the remaining of the flap. As the tumor is very posterior, he cauterized here, for instance, vortex veins or all the vessels that he encounters in the field. And as the tumor is quite posterior, he performs a partial parasplenar vitrectomy to be able to reach the posterior margin of the tumor. Just waiting there. and then continue to cauterize blood vessels like the ciliary, some of the ciliary arteries, quite posterior within the orbit. And so then he's able to complete the outer flap to reach the posterior margin of the tumor with an eye, as you can see, that is quite soft. Then he enters into the inner scleral flap and continues to dissect that flap 360 degrees around the lesion with blunt scissors, and making sure that he's only cutting the sclera and not the choroid at that stage. Starting laterally posterior, and then finally the anterior aspect of the flap. And then there he is tearing the choroid. And as you can see, I have seen many of these cases, there is hardly any bleeding because of the profound hypotension that the patient is at this stage of the surgery. And then he continues to dissect all the choroid, that's normal choroid that he's dissecting all around the 360 degrees, all around the mushroom-shaped lesion. As you all know, when the tumor is mushroom-shaped, Bruch's membrane is attached to the collar stud configuration. So then when he has in this, the tumor is there, you can see that the mushroom shape and the retina that is attached to the tumor right now. So he has to, with a blade, he has to be able to separate the retina from the surface of the tumor. And this is what he says is sort of the blind part of the procedure, because sometimes it's quite difficult to know exactly where the retina ends. So this is a step that is, even sitting by his side on the microscope, sometimes quite hard to know where the retina starts and finishes. So then he continues to detach the retina. And as you will see by the end, when he removes the tumor, you will see the surface of an intact retina with vitreous, an intact vitreous underneath. And after that, he starts closing the outer scleral flap, and you will see that he puts several nylon sutures. Is, as I mentioned, a procedure that takes approximately 2 hours, but probably the second hour is he spends suturing all the flap with many, many sutures all around until the very edge of the flap. He separates the retina from the tumor with using this blade, it is possible that you could leave behind some microscopic seeding of the tumor into the retina. So after completing the suturing of the flap, he inflates the eye again and then he proceeds to place plaque radiotherapy, delivering small doses of radiation to kill any possible seeds that were left behind. So he does it by using a template. That is what we are seeing now. He uses a large plaque, a 25 millimeters ruthenium plaque, and by transillumination he looks into the positioning of the plaque at the size where the tumor was present. and sutures the template and then replace it with the ruthenium plaque. This is delivering a very low dose, much less than would the patient receive should he have been treated only with brachytherapy. It's usually a plaque that stays for overnight only. And closes the conjunctiva. And gives steroids and antibiotics and atropine at the end of the procedure. So this is a 6 months follow-up. This is the fundus of the patient. He preserved his visual acuity, and we can see the edge of the whitish area where represents the coloboma, where the tumor was sitting. As you can see here, it was quite close to the optic nerve. So one of the main aspect of this surgery is, as you are able to remove entirely the tumor, you have enough material to perform a series of analysis that he does in all his melanoma cases. He doesn't only, that's for sure, he does histopathology, and in this particular case was a spindle B-cell tumor with no closed loops and a low mitotic rate, giving a good indication for good survival. But also he does, in every single case, cytogenetic studies. In this patient, looking for abnormalities in chromosome 3. So this patient has a normal chromosome 3 with a gain of chromosome 6 that also are associated with a good prognosis. And then he, based on the patient's age and clinical and histopathological and cytogenetics results, he constructs a personalized survival curve where he is able to tell the patient, in this particular case, of good overall prognosis comparable to general population. So, in conclusion, transscleral local resections conserves the eye and vision when radiotherapy is unsuitable and provides tissue for diagnosis, genomic tumor typing, and prognosis. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonia. A question?
Sonia, the case is impressive. The surgery is fantastic. Just a couple of questions. Do you ever use a tamponade after vitrectomy? And have you ever seen with him a massive retinal detachment during the surgery, a massive choroidal hemorrhage? There are so many complications that happen.
Yeah, exactly. No, he does with what you see, just inflate the eye. And he reported, he has done this surgery for many years now, and he reported his case series of 85 cases. He does say that it's a very steep curve in learning this technique. And at the very beginning, yes, he had many complications, for instance, retinal detachments, choroidal hemorrhages, and he had to enucleate patients, 13 of his patients finished being enucleated shortly after the procedure. However, I also was complaining that I had never seen any of the major complications, and it's because he had perfected the technique for so many years. But yes, the complications that you could see would be retinal detachment. When the tumor is more anterior, they can have hypotony, and tumor recurrences that also he had that's why he's using a large plaque, much larger than the size of the tumor. So with that, also the recurrence rate has decreased. Yeah.
Just one question, a comment. I saw a similar surgery 25 years ago with Golan Payman in Chicago, and a lot of debate at that time about if you can do this kind of surgeries, comparing, and nowadays there are different types of treatment for these cases. The question is, comparing with the other kinds of treatments, what are the major complications and what are the advantage? Because this is a real, it's a fantastic surgery, but this is the best, as your in your title, the best case surgery. A lot of surgeries, it's not the same. The hands in the common surgeon, it should be the same. The age is very important, because like this colleague told us, with the oldest people with the possibility of a massive hemorrhage, caudal detachment. So what are the advantages to do this kind of surgery? And I don't know, because I'm not ocular pathologist. My main area is not retina, it's anterior segment. But what I learned from Miguel, at that time, in 85, there was a theory that managing the tumor for a long time, the metastasis could be higher than not managing, so that there was no touch enucleation. When I was resident, it was that. So what are the advantages and thinking about the very complicated surgery that you show us?
As I mentioned at the beginning, this is not the type of treatment that he will offer right away. You know, he believes in plaque brachytherapy, and if the patient is not suitable for other sort of treatments, then this comes as a possibility. But he will start with plaque brachytherapy, proton beam radiotherapy, other forms of treatment, and in this particular case, because of tumor thickness, he uses ruthenium plaques. And ruthenium plaques can only plaque a tumor up to 5 millimeters. So that's why he opts to go to this type of interventions. The visual acuity in these patients that I have seen over this year is pretty well conserved, and you are avoiding the complications of radiation. So that's one of the advantages of that. It is a big surgery, and as I mentioned also, there is this profound hypotension that helps to decrease the risk of suprachoroidal hemorrhages, together with very careful cauterization of all the vessels. I mean, I didn't explain it that well during the video, but he does spend a lot of time cauterizing blood vessels that will come into the field. I had not seen any suprachoroidal hemorrhage while I was there, but he had reported them at the beginning, and that's why he had adjusted the surgery the way he did, like with profound hypotension and very, very detailed cauterization of vessels.
Do you have a comment?
Congratulations. May I make a question? Yes. Based on Gallon Payne's work, I did two cases of this about 1995. And by that time, my hospital, we don't have plaques. So what we did was to do three or four laser rows around the tumor before the surgery. Then we did a scleral punch. Then we did the transscleral diatomy. And we cut the retina, the choroid, and the tumor all together. And that works well in one case. The other case goes to stasis. Yes, we cut. We put transscleral diatomy around the tumor.
Okay.
Then we cut the sclera, the choroid, and the retina, because we did photocoagulation around the tumor. And by the end, we did vitrectomy, and that works, because you don't have retinal detachment because of the laser run around the tumor.
Okay.
And when you don't have the possibility of radiotherapy by the end of the surgery, that can work also. But nowadays, I don't think we would do that. But that works when you don't have the radiotherapy possibility.
I'm sorry, going back to one of the questions that you asked me about tumor dissemination. Yeah, it was a point like a couple of years ago, thinking that you may disseminate the tumor by doing this type of surgeries, but the new studies have shown that it's all related to chromosomal aberrations on the tumor that will decide the tumor size and will determine the potential, the metastatic capability of the tumor. So it is believed that if they have these abnormal chromosomes like monosomy 3, that is, you have the potential of producing metastasis. And there have been studies, particularly done by German group, Professor Kivela, that has demonstrated that if metastasis is going to occur, it has already is already present at the time of primary, the time of diagnosis of the primary tumor. It's an event that happened probably within many years before you even diagnose the primary malignancy.
A very last and short comment. We are running out of time.
It's only to know after his suture, the sclera,
yeah.
He performed vitrectomy.
No. It's just the anterior vitrectomy at the beginning of the surgery.
And the anterior, the edges of the retina remains.
At the time that you finish the surgery, is detached. You see, as I show there, like he removes the lesion, and you see that the retina is detached. But when you see them the following day, it's starting to attach quite nicely, and the area of the coloboma is the last one to attach. Okay. But when you follow these patients in 1 or 2 days, it's back in place.
I have the last comment. I think you're all very impressed with Sonia's presentation. I'm not impressed at all because you don't know who Sonia really is. I have to talk about Sonia for 1 minute. Think about you guys. And think about Sonia. Sonia came to the laboratory many years ago. She was 9 years old, probably. And what did Sonia do? Sonia was born in Argentina, came after 2 years of residency in Argentina, did all the paperwork, necessary boards, and all the examinations that possible to be done, did residency at McGill. During this residency in ophthalmology, to finish a PhD in ocular pathology in the laboratory. In the meantime, went for 3 years to Florida, to Bascom Palmer, to study further pathology. In the meantime, put up with Guillermo, that's the most difficult test. In the meantime, has 2 children. And did that with grace and with a marvelous personality.
Thank you.
Most importantly, Liverpool is just until September. September 1st, 2010. This is the new associate professor of McGill University doing ocular oncology with us. Welcome, Sonia.